May it please the court. Good afternoon, and also to my friend, Mr. Bice. The chilling effect upon the exercise of First Amendment rights may derive from the fact of the prosecution, unaffected by the prospects of its success or failure. That is the U.S. Supreme Court in Dombrowski versus Feaster in 1965. And that is the principle that the Nevada legislature chose, like California before it, to insure against in cases like this by passing a strong anti-SLAPP law. This case is a classic SLAPP suit, the kind that the legislature had in mind when it passed the when it passed this law. In fact, quite in mind, because in 2015, Mr. Wynn actually himself worked to attempt to essentially repeal the law. So the decision below must be reversed and this suit dismissed. Even in the absence of an anti-SLAPP statute, summary judgment for the defendant is a favored remedy in defamation cases such as this one. Now, in this one, though, if we look at the context of an anti-SLAPP motion, in Manufactured Home Communities Incorporated versus the County of San Diego, in this circuit, 655 F3rd 1171, it said the court should grant the motion if, as a matter of law, the defendant's evidence supporting the motion defeats the plaintiff's attempt to establish evidentiary support for the claim.
Looking at the evidence in the light most favorable to the non-moving party, yes?
Yes, Your Honor, since this is the defendant's motion. However, I think that the court below really misunderstood the case. It's looking at it as if we are trying to prove a sexual harassment case, which is not what we're trying to do. We merely must refute the fact that Ms. Bloom harbored serious doubt as to the falsity of her statements, and she did not. And where her state of mind, as in this case, where a particular state of mind is an element of a claim, it must be plausibly supported by factual allegations, as said by the Supreme Court in Ashcroft versus Iqbal. And as also recognized,
Is it really entirely dependent upon her state of mind? Couldn't somebody look and say the statement she made was reckless because she didn't have evidence or reason to believe it should be that it was truthful? Now, she may have believed it was truthful, but I don't know that she's the ultimate judge of that, is she?
Well, Judge Clifton, you're correct. It is either knowing falsity or a reckless disregard. But St. Amant versus Thompson shows us that that reckless disregard, you must still enter the mind of the speaker and say, does this speaker harbor serious doubts as to the veracity of the publication? So, and I don't think that we're there on this record.
Recklessness is not an entirely subjective standard, right? It has an objective component, at least at the summary judgment stage.
Not in cases like this, Your Honor. I think if we go by what St. Amant says, which is what controls this. Now, of course, recklessness still goes to her state of mind. Now, if we had some overwhelming evidence, like every single piece of evidence said that what happened didn't happen, that we had nothing but witnesses saying that Ms. Mullins, in making her statements, lied to Ms. Bloom. But we're not there.
So we have, for example, Ms. Mullins's deposition testimony. I made it very clear to them that I, with my own ears, had never heard Steve Wynn to say to anyone in management, I want the girls to be in bras and revealing clothing. I never heard him making the demands. So I can only assume that all of these demands essentially came from him. Now, when she says, I made it very clear to them, she's including Ms. Bloom, right?
She is, Your Honor. But she's also...
And why isn't that enough? The jury may not believe your client acted recklessly, but why isn't that enough to establish a disputed issue of material fact as to recklessness?
I think it would be enough if we were trying to prove that this was a sexual harassment case. I don't think that rises to recklessness. In cases like this, the context really matters. Remember, in our briefing, we articulated this, that there was a long history and a very public history of Mr. Wynn's, shall we call it, sexual misconduct, including some claims that were corroborated, proven, and enough to get him not just thrown out of being president of Wynn Resorts, but he had to divest from them completely.
Now, but counsel, the first press release, the initial press release, talked about his demands in at least two different places. And the his demands are Mr. Wynn, right?
They
Mr.
are.
Wynn, one place, Mr. Wynn's demands, another place, his demands. So they're saying that he, this press release reasonably read, is that Mr. Wynn is making these demands, and Ms. Mullins is saying, I made it clear I never heard him make these demands.
Correct. But you don't need to.
Go ahead.
Do we need to hear the general's command in order to know it came from the general's office? The adjutant could communicate the order. The lieutenant can communicate the order. Whether they were his demands from his voice, his demands from his power structure, his demands from an environment here that was completely, it seemed, it's funny. They talk in page 6 of their brief of the fact that none of this really came from Mr. Wynn. This was all simply because the organization liked to do things in what their words, an old school manner. And one might picture the series Mad Men, but this is, it doesn't have to come from his voice. And even then, is that really the line upon which we are going to draw a defamation complaint? Are we going to look at it and say, well, whether the words came from Mr. Wynn's mouth to dress scantily, or whether the words came from somebody else's mouth to dress scantily, was this reckless? Or was it Ms. Bloom hearing Ms. Mullen's story, then hearing corroboration from another witness, then also examining really 2 years worth of reporting about Mr. Wynn's conduct?
I'm sorry, was there testimony from somebody that I told Ms. Bloom that I heard Wynn say these things?
There is no testimony saying that. But, Your Honor, I'm afraid that if you're focusing on that, you're not focusing on the right fact. The right fact.
Your argument actually is confusing me today, because I thought that that you'd agree that the gist of the press release is that Mr. Wynn himself was responsible for giving the direction and was personally involved in the retaliation. So I think that's why the questioning really focused on, well, what information is there out there beyond just speculation that he directed, was responsible for directing. Your analogy said, well, you don't have to know that the general gave the order for the troops to march. Sure, but in this particular case, I don't see anything beyond kind of admitted speculation that Mr. Wynn personally gave the instruction or was involved in the retaliation.
Well, I can help with that, Judge Wynn. If you look at our record, first off, Angelina Mullins testified at ER 1349, 1351, that subordinates of Wynn, including his right-hand man, would stop rehearsals upon learning Wynn would attend, then instruct all the female cast members to strip down to more revealing clothing. So if the right-hand man comes in and says, Mr. Wynn's coming, quick, I think it's reasonable for her to believe it came from Mr. Wynn. Now, it gets transmitted to Ms. Bloom. Ms. Bloom, relying upon her 30 years of experience trying these kinds of cases, relying upon Mr. Oslin, who assisted in investigating the case, nobody at this organization, or really the head of this organization, Ms. Bloom, nor Mr. Oslin, harbored any doubts at all that this was the case. They are allowed to be wrong. The First Amendment, the actual malice standard, New York Times versus Sullivan and its progeny allow you to make a mistake. The only question is this enough to rise to the level of recklessness? Yet her client didn't lie to her. She doesn't believe she lied to her. And even now she still testified at her deposition that even today she had no doubt. And Ms. Mullins testified that the statement was as if she had written it herself. That's the direct quote from her at her deposition.
Well, counsel, in the amended press release, you say it seemed to my client that these instructions must have come from Mr. Nguyen, right?
Correct.
And now, in the original press release, it was clear that the instructions did come from Mr. Nguyen.
It was ambiguous at best, Your Honor, using the passive voice. And in this circuit, if something is ambiguous, that's not enough to rise to actual malice.
Many cast members, including my client, considered Mr. Nguyen's demands humiliating. My client considered his, meaning Mr. Nguyen's, demands unprofessional. Honestly, even in the light most favorable to you, I don't see those as ambiguous about who made the demands.
Well, Your Honor, remember, my client, before running this statement, sent it to Ms. Mullins, the sole eyewitness, the sole firsthand eyewitness, sent it to her. She cleared it. So it's not Ms. Bloom saying this happened. She's relaying her story. Now, in the corrected press release, this was after Wynn's people gave a statement saying, we think that these portions are false. As an accommodation to them, as a subsequent remedial measure, yes, they changed it to try to make them happy. But regardless, if Ms. Mullins says, let's just say hypothetically, Ms. Mullins says that Mr. Nguyen slapped her, there's no evidence that that happened, but she swears that it happened. Why should Ms. Bloom doubt him?
Well, I mean, but the hypothetical I would come back at you with, Ms. Mullins testifies in her deposition, well, I never told her Mr. Nguyen slapped me, that my eyes were closed, I got slapped, I just assumed it was Mr. Nguyen, I didn't actually see him, but who else could it have been, but I never told her he slapped me.
Well, if Ms. Bloom then takes that information and infers from everything else she knows, she's not simply a stenographer of Ms. Mullins' statements. We have 2 years worth of reports of Mr. Wynn's sexual misconduct. Mr. Nguyen, everything seems here orchestrated for Mr. Nguyen. The fact that Mr. Nguyen is like Paulie in Goodfellas and never speaks directly to anybody, I don't think makes my client reckless in presuming how she interpreted Ms. Mullins' statement. And when she sends it to Ms. Mullins and says, check this before I release it, and Ms. Mullins says, it's as if I wrote it myself, I think that's a pretty darn good fact check for my client. I will be happy to continue answering questions, but I see I have 2.5 minutes left I'd like to reserve for rebuttal.
All right.
Thank you.
Good morning, members of the court. Todd Weiss on behalf of plaintiff Mr. Nguyen, plaintiff below. The district court entered a ruling on a summary judgment. Ms. Bloom and her firm agree that this was a motion for summary judgment under Federal Rule Civil Procedure 56, and that is the standard that applies. What we are hearing now today, I would argue for the first time, is that contrary to what they told the district court,
Counsel, I think I'm hearing an echo, so it's kind of hard to hear that last part of your sentence. Maybe approaching the microphone a little more.
My extreme apologies.
Yeah, I was having some trouble myself as well, but I think when you're closer, Counsel, I think I can hear you.
I'm sorry, I've used it this way before without issue. Apologies. So
that's better now. If you can start over again.
Thank you. What we heard from during this argument is that really the press release that is at issue in this case is somehow now not false, even though they conceded to the district court that it was, even though they conceded for purposes of their appeal that the press release. We're now hearing essentially the argument that it really wasn't false, but the issue for the court is simply, Is the district court
directly conclude
that there are issues
that will
happen?
We're starting to have the issue again.
My apologies.
So right now where you are, I mean, I'm sorry if this is an uncomfortable physical position, but where you are right now, I could hear you, but where you were before, I was having a lot of trouble hearing you.
Yes, my apologies. As long as the court can hear me now.
Yes. I think what somebody really helps And if you want me to pause the clock for you to get headphones, that might help too.
No, that would take me a little bit. My apologies to the court.
We're all dealing with the technology, not your problem. We're just dealing with it.
I haven't had this issue before. So, but moving forward, the only issue is whether or not there was evidence in the record to create a genuine issue of material fact that needs to be resolved. The issues here are disputed. In fact, if you look at Ms. Bloom's open brief report, the principal criticism of this is that it, quote, ignored most of the evidence on the record. Actually, that's not what the report did, but that is really what her argument is. This was a summary judgment, and so therefore the district court must accept the moving party must not accept the moving.
I'm sorry. Judge Bennett, can you hear?
No.
I'm starting to do a combination of listening and lip reading. So
my apologies. Can I pause for 1 minute and go get a headset? I don't understand this.
I'm going to stop the clock.
Thank you.
Judge Nguyen, I'm going to step away for that 60 seconds if that's okay.
Of course.
I will try this. My apologies. I hope it is an improvement.
Oh, much better. Much better.
All right. Thank you. My apologies again to the court. So, turning now back to the argument after this technical glitch. As the law requires, the district court here credited the disputed facts and the evidence in the light most favorable to Mr. Nguyen and drawing all reasonable inferences on that evidence in Mr. Nguyen's favor. The district court did not ignore the evidence that was proffered by Ms. Bloom. In fact, that evidence was simply disputed. Ms. Bloom's argument is essentially that the court should draw the inferences that she chooses from that evidence and should ignore the reasonable inferences and conclusions in light most favorable to Mr. Nguyen. The district court only had to ultimately resolve one issue in this motion for summary judgment because the parties essentially agreed to the other issues. They agreed that Mr. Nguyen was a public figure. They agreed that the press release was actually false. And although they didn't agree, the district court said that it was going to assume that for purposes of this motion, the press release was a matter of public concern to fall within the first prong of Nevada statute. So the sole question before this court, the sole question is, is there evidence in the record from which is viewed in the light most favorable to Mr. Nguyen that there is a defamation claim against Ms. Bloom and her firm for the issuance of that press release? And the answer is, as the district court noted, yes. And I'm just going to cover some of them quickly. But there are some that even the district court itself did not cite. One of them is that Ms. Bloom and her firm justified the issuance of this press release and its timing, claiming that Mr. Nguyen's counsel responded, quote, no comment to this demand letter that they sent. They repeated that representation in a declaration to the district court.
They repeated that representation to this court in their appellate brief. And this supposed silence by Mr. Wynn's counsel, according to Ms. Bloom, was so unique as to somehow give her great confidence in the accuracy of what she was alleging.
What about Mr. Ndaza's point that Ms. Mullins reviewed the press release prior to issuance and confirmed the accuracy of the press release?
Yes, so Ms. Mullins reviewed the accuracy of the press release and confirmed it. But that does not excuse Ms. Bloom or allow Ms. Bloom to ignore all the other facts of which she was aware. And there were lots of other facts of which she was aware that cast substantial doubt on this, including, as Ms. Mullins said, because we asked Ms. Mullins in her deposition, and the court needs to recall, we asked her specifically, why were there things omitted in that declaration or in that press release? Why were things omitted? And her response was, well, I'm not a professional. I don't draft these things. I left it to the lawyers to draft them in light of how they viewed it should be presented. So again, it's not like Ms. Mullins is saying, I made these strategic decisions about how this is worded, what it was characterized as. She relied upon her lawyers, and they are the ones who made, I can't remember if this is her exact terminology, made the editorial decision about what was included or not. And so if you look again at the evidence as a whole, the entire picture, Ms. Bloom's statement that somehow Mr. Wynn's counsel confirmed this by saying they would have no comment was disproven in discovery. It is actually a false statement in her declaration, because discovery revealed that she had in fact communicated with her client, Ms. Mullins, and informed her client, Ms. Mullins, that Mr. Wynn's counsel had in fact said they needed an additional week's time in order to get back to her. And as the district judge noted, the press release, this wasn't a lawsuit, let's recall that. They'd already issued a demand letter, and I'll talk about that in just a moment. But this press release had one purpose. It was to put pressure on Mr. Wynn to try and get him to give them money. That was its sole purpose. And in fact, they used the word pressure in their own notes in describing what its purpose was. Just like in their own internal notes, they described speculating, how can we get this guy to come to the table and pay us money? And consider the substance, again, of the demand letter itself. The demand letter purported to be a legal claim with one cause of action, tortious breach of the contract. Mr. Wynn had no contract with Ms. Mullins. Mr. Wynn wasn't even at the company when this demand was made. This demand letter had not even been sent to the company. All this was, and I think that the reasonable inference from the evidence is, all this was an attempted shakedown. Make allegations, publish as salacious of a press release as she thought she could get away with. And by the way, she thought she could get away with anything. Because as she later told the district court, and when she filed her answer, and actually I should say she filed her answer before this motion was resolved, Ms. Bloom claimed that Mr. Wynn is a libel-proof plaintiff. In other words, she can say anything about him, no matter how false, no matter how defamatory, and he has no recourse. And that's what this is really about. She believed that Mr. Wynn was sufficiently wounded by all of the other news articles out there that she could get a free shot at him, and that there would be no consequences to that free shot. Ms. Bloom's own, in the record also, Ms. Bloom's own engagement letter confirms that that was the plan and that that was what was going on. She has an engagement letter where she's only in her only representation of this client is for purposes of trying to negotiate a settlement, for which then she receives 40% of any settlement that is received. She had no obligation to represent her in litigation because, after all, there were no actual claims that were asserted against Mr. Wynn or even threatened against Mr. Wynn. Their own demand letter was simply a claim directed at the company with whom Mr. Wynn was no longer affiliated. And as the trial court noted, when it looked through the evidence here, Ms. Bloom originally tried to support her contention that she did not harbor doubts about this this press release by claiming that she had also interviewed a Lauren Molina. She put that in a declaration. As the district court noted, that was later proven to also be untrue. That in fact, they did not interview this Ms. Molina until after the press release had already issued. And the discovery from that demonstrated that Ms. Molina had in fact objected to many of the assertions that they had tried to get her to subscribe to in a declaration. Additionally, as the district court noted, if the court looks at what the witnesses actually all testified to, they all contradict the representations that are made in that press release. I thought that the most noticeable of which, and this is also cited by the district court judge, is that Mr. Chan Timms, or Con Timms, I apologize, explained where the hostility was between Ms. Mullins and the choreographer. It had nothing to do with Mr. Nguyen. It had nothing to do with being scantily clad. As he explained, it had to do with Ms. Mullins' work ethic and that they clashed, and that they clashed from the inception of her role there. All of that was, of course, conveniently omitted from the press release because it was inconsistent with the narrative that Ms. Bloom wanted to advance as part of her effort to get Mr. Leverage on Mr. Nguyen to get her to pay her money, of which she would have received 40% of. Then I would say, but last but not least, and Judge Bennett, this is a point I would like to comment on a question you posed, and that is the revised press release. Now, my friend, Mr. Randazza, says that this was an accommodation to Mr. Nguyen. No, it wasn't an accommodation to Mr. Nguyen. This was Ms. Bloom's recognition of consciousness of guilt when she was informed that Mr. Nguyen was likely going to sue her and her client. So she rushed out a revised press release, changing all of the references from Mr. Nguyen, and now changing them to generic people at the company.
Counsel,
Yes.
Opposing counsel said during argument, described this as a subsequent remedial measure. Was introduction of this objected to under some Nevada evidence code barring subsequent remedial measures to prove consciousness of wrongdoing?
No, it was not. And in fact, I believe they offered the corrected press release as part of their own motion, is my recollection. So here's what the evidence showed the district court and why the district court said there's a triable issue here against Ms. Bloom and what Ms. Bloom was doing. And that is the witnesses contradicted her. Ms. Bloom was engaged in I'll use the word scheme, to an attempt to get money out of Mr. Nguyen by asserting claims that, in fact, there were no claims. The press release was all about putting pressure on him. This wasn't a lawsuit where she could claim the benefits of the litigation privilege. This was a press release that was designed to ratchet up pressure to see if it would weaken up his wallet. And that's where this lawsuit then stems from. She rushed then out this amended press release, which she admits is a corrected press release, which in fact changed many of the, and I believe as part of the record, it is Supplemental Appendix 172, where we gave a red line of all the changes that she made to it to get this out. And of course, it was out, I believe, a matter of minutes after the lawsuit was filed, is my recollection from the record. She made all of these changes, now eliminating again all the references to how Mr. Nguyen did this, Mr. Nguyen demanded that, Mr. Nguyen required this. And by the way, when those witnesses were deposed about this, they all conceded. They had no knowledge of Mr. Nguyen doing any of those things. And in fact, Mr. Con Timms contradicted many of these representations that they had actually happened. Again, when the evidence is viewed in the light most favorable to Mr. Nguyen, which is what the law requires, the district court is correct in concluding that there is a triable issue of fact here for the jury to decide. Contrary to Ms. Bloom's bet, Mr. Nguyen is not a libel-proof plaintiff. There, in fact, I believe every court that I am aware of has rejected the argument that a libel-proof plaintiff doctrine never exists anymore in the law because it allows people to slander people that are in difficult situations, which is what she was willing to bet she could do. She was willing to bet that Mr. Wynn had been so wounded by these other allegations that he would not have the veracity and he would not come after her for issuing this false press release. She miscalculated. And under the law, there is a triable issue of fact here for the jury to decide that fact. I thank the court for its time unless it has questions for me. And I apologize again for the technology.
Not a problem. Like this, Judge Clifton said, we're all struggling with that. Thank you, Mr. Meisner.
Your Honors, thank you. My friend, Mr. Weiss, I think is a little bit unfamiliar with the record since he was not there below. But if we look at the record actually at ER 0061 to 62, 135 to 136, Ms. Molina actually, Ms. Mullins actually stated that she had given up on any kind of money at the time. So this fanciful story, I think, is far further from the truth that it was some kind of a shakedown. That's far further from the truth than this press release was. Now, additionally, if we look at what he said was contradictory, that the way that the press release was written, that was the first version of it. And the deponent actually testified, my client originally put in a sentence that Mr. Wynn asked to do this so we could look at the dancer's vaginas. That was one of the statements. She said that was a bit extreme. She was part of the editing process. Now, our client is under no obligation to call her client a liar at that time. The uncontroverted testimony of the appellants, Ms. Mullins and Colt Pratty, shows the press releases were published so that Mullins could tell her story in the Me Too era. The fact that Mr. Contemis had some contradictions about 2 years after the original statement, even he testified during his deposition that, yes, the original version was probably closer to the truth as his memory had faded. So the standard for a public figure to survive summary judgment in this case is very high, and there's a reason for that. In order to demonstrate reckless disregard of the truth, Gertz versus Welch requires that the speaker entertain serious doubts as to the truth of their statements. 418 U.S. 323, 334 at note 6. It is not whether a reasonably prudent man or woman in this case would have published or would have investigated before publishing, but whether the defendant entertained serious doubts. That's also St. Amant versus Thompson. We do not have any serious doubt. In fact, we have no doubt. And if the facts that are in the release may turn out to be proven false in a sexual harassment claim, that's different than my client harboring serious doubts at the time of publication. Thank you, Your Honors. If you have any questions?
It doesn't appear that we do. Thank you very much.
I thank you for your time. And thank you, Todd. Nice to see you.
All right. The matter is submitted for decision.